who's going to end up where when it comes to head coaching, but also where's Sam Darnold going to end up? It's a stacked inside coverage, and it's coming at you right now. He's Charles Robinson. I'm Jason Pitts. It's Inside Coverage. See, Rob, no Frank today. Are we going to argue with each other? Because Feisty Fridays, like, we ready to throw down the boxing gloves? I'm not as argumentative as Frank is. I don't know if you and I can have the same tussle. It just feels like, you know, babyface versus babyface here. There's nobody here to be the bad guy.
Yeah, I advocated for bringing in the Frank puppet. Didn't get a lot of traction, obviously, in the conversation. I think that's I'd like nothing more than to dictate everything Frank says and does. So the Frank puppet to me is a brilliant idea. I think we get great ratings.
We'll work on the Frank puppet for the Super Bowl. All right, we got a lot to get to. Let's look at front runners for coaching jobs, and let's start with the Saints. Who's the front runner and why?
Well, look, I think the Mike McCarthy to me, once he got cut loose from Dallas, it really remixed the coaching interview matrix, because I think in a place like Chicago, he becomes very, very prominent the second he exits the Dallas Cowboys franchise. Obviously, they had asked to talk to him, Jerry Jones, for whatever reason. And I've, you know, had some theories trotted out to me, decided not to let him speak with the Chicago Bears. And that wasn't available to Mike McCarthy until after his contract with the Cowboys ultimately ended up expiring. But I think the other job prominently, clearly the Saints. He's got time in that organization. He knows general manager Mickey Loomis really well. He knows the family really well. He's someone that I think in his time in the organization as an offensive coordinator under Sean Payton, very, very impressed in terms of, you know, the organization, how they looked at him, the things he was able to do there. Remember, Aaron Brooks was the primary quarterback that Mike McCarthy coached for the New Orleans Saints. And it was an era where Aaron Brooks was a guy that moved around in the pocket, had a ton of athleticism. He was somebody that could throw and run. He was in a way sort of ahead of the curve. I mean, he'd fit in right now. He'd be perfect for this era of football. And who knows what his ceiling would be in today's NFL. But Mike McCarthy really turned him into a very high level functioning quarterback for the Saints for a number of years. And they remember that. And they're also sitting there staring at their quarterback position saying, well, look, we still need to get something out of Derek Carr if he's going to be around this offseason for at least one more year if we're going to retain him. And then we have to start to look at who is going to be the quarterback that we groom moving into the future. And what better coach really to do that than Mike McCarthy, who's obviously had a ton of head coaching experience, obviously knows how to set a culture in place, and now has been through two varied situations with the Green Bay Packers where you don't have an owner, you have a board. He had a somewhat mercurial quarterback in Aaron Rodgers in terms of what their relationship was like in the end. And then he goes to a place like Dallas where it's just a circus. And he's up there like the bear, sitting in the middle of the three rings, just looking around like, okay, I guess I'm here. I'm going to do the best I can in this scenario with this ownership and Jerry Jones doing what he does. I think that's attractive, you know, to the New Orleans Saints, knowing that he's weathered some things and wanting that steadying influence. So I think a lot of people across the league would have put Aaron Glenn with the Saints. But the second that Mike McCarthy became available, when you talk to people in other franchises, everyone pointed at the Saints and said, look, if Chicago can't land him, almost everyone believes that the Saints are ultimately going to be in the Mike McCarthy business when it's over.
So I'm trying to figure out who Derek Carr is. And I think it's important here to realize that a quarterback's not the only reason a coach does or doesn't take a job. We've right. talked a little bit about that. But like, if you're taking the Saints job, they have the ninth pick in the draft this year. They have, currently as we sit, they have the worst salary cap space going into next yep. year of anybody in the league.
It's you a know, rebuild.
So they don't
it's
have any
rebuild.
Money.
There's a rebuild yeah. coming, like, right? We can agree on that.
Right. So, like, is Derek Carr part of that rebuild for right now, or do you just rip the Band-Aid off? I mean, because Derek Carr's still going to start somewhere next year, right? Like, I mean, right. Derek Carr doesn't suck. He's just not great.
Well, look, financially, it's still a situation where to keep him, is not necessarily the worst thing for them financially. Just in terms of the cap hit, you're ultimately going to absorb. Really, I think the exit for him, it's after next season. So in a way, you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, you know, at the very least, this is a guy who very well could be on this roster. And if he's not going to be on the roster, what else are you doing? As you said, the draft pick is not in a position where you're going to be in the business with at least, I think, the top two quarterbacks. We'll see how the draft ultimately unfolds in terms of the evaluation process. Everyone's going to talk about Cam Ward. Everyone's going to talk about Shedeur Sanders. I think the biggest problem for the Saints, it's not that it looks like a two quarterback draft, and that could expand. As one general manager said to me last week when we were talking, he said, look, I don't think a lot of people thought Bo Nix would be a top 12 pick. I know a lot of people didn't think Michael Penix would be a top 12, let alone a top 8 pick in the NFL draft. We didn't know 6 quarterbacks were going to come off in the first 12 picks. So let's let this play out, even though it looks like a crappy class. Let's see how these guys perform in workouts, and maybe someone like a Jalen Milroe or someone else starts to work themselves up the board as we get closer to April. But still, if you're the Saints, you have so many teams in front of you that have quarterback needs, not only at the 1 and the 2 between the Tennessee Titans and the Cleveland Browns, but you have the New York Giants in front of you. You have the Las Vegas Raiders in front of you. That's 4 teams that prominently everyone knows are going to go out and get some semblance of a quarterback, whether it's a rookie or a veteran who can come in and start immediately. All 4 of them are going to lean into that. That puts the Saints on the outside looking in. So again, that's something that leans into Derek Carr continuing to be on this roster. And again, when you look at McCarthy, look at his history of quarterbacks. He's worked with a number of different guys who were at a number of different stages in their career. He helped Dak Prescott go from what I thought was a mid-level good quarterback, got him into the MVP conversation, played a very, very large part in that development. You go back to his time with the Green Bay Packers, and he dealt with not only Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, but you know, you have a guy like Matt Hasselbeck who will tell you today, hey, I was a backup in the organization and Mike made me better. And I wasn't even a starter under Mike McCarthy. You go back prior to that, he had a dud with Alex Smith for 1 year in Alex Smith's rookie season. But, you know, talk to Alex Smith now. He doesn't hold that against Mike McCarthy. There were broad failures across the organization. You go back even further to the Kansas City Chiefs. And it was like everybody who basically picked up a ball with the Kansas City Chiefs. Joe Montana, Elvis Gerbach, Rich Gannon, Steve Bono. I mean, it was just one guy after another. In that organization, Mike was able to influence. And then he wasn't even the OC. He was a quality control guy and a quarterback's coach. So I think he can work with Derek Carr. That's the point. And if it is a rebuild, when you get past that, Mike is someone who's had his hands around retooling of franchises before.
All right, so let's move on to the Jets job. We've mentioned a bunch of these jobs that are out there. The Jets, another interesting one, trying to figure out what I don't even know what the hell the roster is going to look like next year.
Right.
Like, so
nobody does.
You know, yeah. That's what's so tricky about this. See, Rob is like, okay, it's the Jets job, but the Jets we see today, if you're out there playing Madden right now, you might as well throw that away because the roster is going to look wildly different next year. So who is it and why?
Well, who's the general manager is a big question with the Jets too, right? We don't know that. And the general manager and the head coach are going to impress upon Aaron Rodgers, whether or not there are going to be changes. Rodgers has come out and said, look, am I going to be around with the Jets? It all depends on who's the next head coach and who's the next general manager. You could get a tandem that come in and go, look, we're looking across the landscape of quarterbacks. We really don't see a better option than Aaron Rodgers. We would like a bridge quarterback. So do we go get a bridge quarterback, or we just keep the bridge quarterback that we have right now in Aaron Rodgers? And he comes back and he ultimately plays in 2025, as he's said he's interested in doing. So I think for a head coach there, everyone, especially when Mike McCarthy became free and a lot of people start to look at New Orleans and the pre-existing relationship there, Aaron Glenn also has a pre-existing relationship in New Orleans, but he played in New York for the Jets. I think he's someone who brings a lot to the table as a leader and a defensive coordinator. I don't want to say I would guarantee that he's at the very top of that list. The one thing that gives me a little bit of reticence is that Woody Johnson and Robert Saleh did not connect. And I think one of the things about Robert Saleh that really drove Woody Johnson crazy was that he didn't think he was a great tactician. He thought he was overrated as a motivator. And those are things that are strong for Aaron Glenn. I think people really like what he's been able to do as a tactician for the defensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions. Another like name that's getting added to the mix now, Brian Flores. The Minnesota Vikings are out of the playoffs. Brian Flores is stacking interviews right now. He's going to interview in Chicago. He's going to interview with the New York Jets. So that's another name that I cannot completely rule out. But, you know, look, I foolishly on social media decided, hey, let me kind of sit down and put a thumbnail together and call my shot early, which is always stupid early on in the, you know, in the coaching carousel. But I put Aaron Glenn in with the New York Jets because I think he is a culture fit in terms of the defensive players that they have. I think he can hit the ground running with the strength of the team immediately. And as he said himself, I'm more than just a defensive coach. I'm a coach. I'm a leader. I think when you talk to players in Detroit, that definitely resonates. And I do think he would be a fit in New York.
I think it's one of the interesting things about the Lions, because certainly we're going to get to Ben Johnson in a minute too. Like, this is a team, for as much as Dan Campbell has accomplished, he's got two great coordinators that he helped pick, right? So like, hey, let's give him all the credit in the world. But you pointed out on a show, what, about a month ago, that one of the things that really stood out about Vrabel was not only his ability to pick LaFleur, but also Arthur Smith, right? Like, you got to get that right a couple of times. I do think it's an interesting spot. You're like sort of like Sirianni with the Eagles, where they lost their offensive and defensive coordinator and all of a sudden everything changed. Like, if I'm the Lions, I'm sure I've got succession plans and everything's great. But it just feels to me like we at least have to put this into the conversation about Detroit for right now in the maximizing it's our window. Like, you got two of the best coordinators in the NFL. You might not have that next year.
Yeah, oh, there's no question. I mean, they could definitely have two monster holes in their coaching staff. And what's really interesting, though, is because of how Detroit's built, feasibly both of those coordinators could come back in 2025 and actually have even better seasons. It's hard for Ben Johnson to imagine him having a better season with the Detroit Lions. But the reality is all their key guys are back. And if they're all healthy and let's say Jameson Williams takes another step forward, Sam Laporta continues to take another step forward, I would think Tim Patrick as like the number four who can catch passes and be a very active option on that offense, you know, can take a step forward. We're going to talk about Christian Mahogany, he's a right guard who's going to get a start in place of Kevin Zeitler. They feel really good about Christian Mahogany. I think that's a 24-year-old right guard that could end up being their starting right guard next year. And so there's the ability, I think, for Detroit offensively to have all those pieces back together, have the continuity, have health. And if the players, particularly the young players, and there are plenty of them on that offense, get better, that offense should get better. Defensively, it's crazy. I mean, they could think of all the guys that you can ultimately return next season, not only from Aiden Hutchinson, Aleem McNeil, Ennis Rakestraw could have, he's going to have another year. Obviously, he's a rookie, but, you know, some of the young pieces on that defense returning the litany of guys that have been out over the course of the season. If you're Aaron Glenn, you're saying, I've been piecing it together this year. If I get this unit back on the field next year and everybody's healthy, plus all the backups have gotten a ton of play in 2024, that defense could take a huge jump forward. So Glenn is in the interesting spot that, for the most part, when defensive coordinators rise to a certain level and get any job offer, those advising those defensive coordinators typically say, you really got to think about taking this. Even if it doesn't feel perfect, you're a defensive coordinator. And it's an extremely wobbly market for defensive coordinators from one year to the next. If you pass on a job this year, unlike offensive coordinators who can have a wider head coaching window, that can close on you after only one year. Aaron Glenn might be in the position where he has a little bit of a luxury and could pass on jobs or not land a job in this cycle, have a much better defense in 2025, and be at the very top of lists next season.
Can we also acknowledge that, like, okay, greatness, sustainable greatness is built through the draft. I believe that hardcore. I mean, the Lions have drafted so stinking well. Like, I just looked it up. They have the eighth most cap space going into next year. Like, they could spend money on whoever they want. Why do they have such a good team with the eighth most draft space? Because they're just killing it in the draft. Their top picks have done so well over the course of the last 3 years. You got to step back and just say, okay. And by the way, Jared Goff just turned 30. So like it feels like Jared Goff has been in the league for 20 years. He hasn't. Yeah. Like he just turned 30. They got another 6-7 years of this. Like before, like that's the crazy thing to me is that the Lions are really at the beginning of a window that could turn into absolute dominance. And the fact that we're talking about him today and what they're going to do this weekend with an injury, with the defensive side of the ball that's been decimated by injuries, it just hasn't slowed him down. The Lions are truly a juggernaut now. There's no other way to say that.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's somewhat misleading because you have to project the cap out a few years because they do have stars who they extended. Jared Goff, Penei Sewell, they just redid David Montgomery. Amon-Ra St. Brown is near the top of the wide receiver pack. Now, the plus side is they're not paying their quarterback at the tippy top of the quarterback market. That little bit of cushion between the 52, $53 million a year AAV that Goff is making makes a difference that it's not 60 because it gives you, and we're dumbing down how the numbers work, but technically it gives you that extra $7 million a year in cap space to work with somewhere else. Amon-Ra St. Brown, despite the fact that he's a first team all pro wide receiver the last 2 years next to Justin Jefferson's not making $35, $36 million a season. So that gap gives them additional money to play with, even though they have an elite level wide receiver. But, you know, look, there's all these quarterbacks, they start to cross each other in future years. That's where the capologists come in. That's where they make all their money, is because they're making sure all the asteroid hits don't happen in one season. You work it out, you finesse it, you make sure you never have three guys who are making more than 60% of your cap, which is, I don't know why that's the number, but you hear that from cap guys like, hey, don't ever tilt the scales over 60% on three guys in any given year. Don't have all three of your greatest guys coming up and you're staring at a cap where you're like, oh my God, these guys are making 72% of our cap this year. Now we got to start cutting guys or splicing up the deals and figuring out ways to hamstring ourselves in the future. The Lions have done a really good job of that. But I'll say this to you, they have a lot of great young guys. They have to extend these guys. Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be a monster extension.
Yeah, break the bank.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's going to be huge. Aiden Hutchinson, are you kidding me? Like, Aiden Hutchinson in pass rushing metrics, despite breaking his leg, was leading the league in a lot of pass rushing metrics, like, late into the season for some of these, even though he missed essentially, more than half the season. So, you have a scenario where you're going to have to extend him after year three. There are some huge contract extensions coming down the line, and Detroit might have to make some decisions at some point, particularly with some veteran players. Kevin Zeitler, right, is a guy that from a run standpoint, he's in his mid-30s, but he is an elite-level run blocker as a right guard, works perfectly with Penei Sewell on the right side of that offensive line. But he's a free agent coming into the offseason. I don't know that they necessarily keep him, despite the fact that he's an elite-level run blocker, and he'll go out there and he'll make money in free agency. Someone will go, hey, we think Zeitler can play until he's 38. Let's sign him to a big deal. They're going to have to start to make some interesting decisions with some of the older players when we get into the offseason after 2025, 26.
But I love, as you've referenced before, the Lions structure their front office where they've got a whole group that's taking care of the salary cap. And they're not putting that on there. So it's like, hey, here's the total money. I'll leave it to you guys to figure out how we're going to finagle that. They're absolutely put the Detroit Lions are putting on a clinic in competence at the competency at this point. Like, really, I can't believe I'm saying that. Like, it just shows you how it can turn around. And it's stunning when you look at those numbers.
Real quick, Fitz, I want to bring up one thing that was interesting to me because it happened today on NFL Network. Good Morning Football. They had Max Crosby on, right? And Max Crosby is a Michigan guy. He grew up a Lions fan. Grew up a Pistons fan, Red Wings fan, Tigers fan. And it was wild to me to hear Max Crosby at one point say, I'm paraphrasing here, but he was like, I grew up my whole life like waiting for the Lions to be great. And now I'm in the NFL and they're great. And just kind of remarking like, this is what I waited for, throughout my life living in Michigan as a Lions fan. And now I'm here and I'm not on the Lions and they've turned into this Super Bowl contender. When an elite level player like that, and granted, he's from Michigan, there's background there, there's roots. But again, when an elite level player like that looks at the organization and says, I admire that, it means something. And that's kind of where the Lions are right now. There are other players throughout the league who are talking to players on the Lions and they're singing the praises of Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell. Hey, this is real. What you see is real. It's not fake. We're not faking it. And I think that's very attractive to NFL players. And I'd be very curious. I don't know if Detroit will ever be a destination, for free agency. But I wonder if they start to get to a position where maybe some players who are kind of nearing the end of their career and have a little bit of gas left in the tank go, maybe I got a shot if I go and I play for Dan Campbell. Maybe that's how I want to go out on my shield, is maximizing something under a guy that his players have nothing but great things to say about.
I mean, it stood out to me. I listened to Max on his SiriusXM show talking a couple of weeks ago about he wants the Raiders to give him a very definitive plan on how they're going to start winning. He doesn't want an 8-year plan where he's winning at the end of his career.
Right.
And when they also asked him about some of the coaching candidates that really stand out to him, he specifically by name mentioned Ben Johnson. As somebody that he absolutely loves. So I don't think that's accidental. We'll get to that in a minute and see if he's even around to see that happen. Another one here, the Jags. I know you've got Liam Cohen to the Jags. Let me just real quick. I have to tell you this Liam Cohen story. Before Will Levis was drafted, we had Liam Cohen on ESPN when I was working on ESPN Radio with Harry Douglas. We had him on our show. And we spent 10 minutes in an interview and then another 15 minutes after the interview talking to him. He had such a masterful plan of, if you do the following things, we can figure out how to get the best out of Will Levis. One of those things, by the way, was that he wouldn't even see the field for at least the first year, maybe the first 2 years of his career. But he had a very formulaic plan on how he thought Will Levis should be developed. And I think about that every time I see the Titans just absolutely, they run him into the ground. They got nothing there. I don't think he was a great pick anyway, but if he was going to be successful in the league, he needed everything around him to be right. And the Titans did everything around him wrong. All I think about constantly is, man, Liam Cohen's voice is in the back of my head with everything he wanted to do that the Titans didn't do. And I have so much respect for that. And then we're watching him, obviously with the Buccaneers, have tremendous success with Baker. It feels like this guy's going to be a head coach soon.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, early in the process, out of the Jaguars, I heard, hey, we're kind of trying to get to the Liam Cohen interview. And I was like, oh, like, I'm thinking Ben Johnson, obviously everyone's going to go, Ben Johnson, Trevor Lawrence, like, this obviously makes so much sense. He's going to want to go down to Jacksonville where there's a good roster in place. This only makes sense. And yet when you talk to people in the organization, it was like, we don't have the Liam Cohen interview yet, but it's important. It is one we're waiting for. And I put a lot of stock into that. I was like, they're hot on this guy. They are very, very much waiting for Liam Cohen and the Buccaneers to essentially exit the playoffs so they can get things moving on this interview process. And that's why I put Liam Cohen there, because there were people in the organization who really, really liked him a lot. And when you talk to them, I think what's really interesting is we focus so much on Liam Cohen and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers through Baker, right? Of course, the quarterbacks, we always focus it through that. What Baker was able to do with Mike Evans, Jalen McMillan, a young guy who comes in and blossoms into a very a good building piece down the second half of the season. The offensive line, we look at its height, the best out of those players. There's so much there to be had. Cade Otton, right? But I think one of the things that really intrigues the Jacksonville Jaguars about Liam Cohen is, look at the Buccaneers' run game. And if you sit down, what I've been told is if you sit on tape and you really start to break down what he's doing schematically with the run game, it is some high level stuff. Like, they're very, very impressed with what he's been able to do with not only Rashad White, but obviously Bucky Irving, who comes in as a rookie, late drafted rookie, and is arguably the best running back on the field from that rookie class. Not even arguably. I think clearly he was the best rookie running back in the league this year. I think that's something that is very attractive to the Jacksonville Jaguars, because I think they know, look, if we can get Travis Etienne back to this level he was at previously, plus on top of that, we've seen Tank Bigsby be able to be this physical runner who really helps us establish some dominance on offense. You look at Detroit and you go, okay, they got Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. Could we have our own David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs in Travis Etienne, who's still in his mid-20s, in Tank Bigsby, who's in his early 20s? Could we have that kind of dynamic? And who is the guy who's most capable of putting that out there? If not Ben Johnson, it's Liam Cohen. When you go and you look at what he was able to do with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers run game. So I think that's very, very attractive. And I think Liam Cohen was not a name that I think a ton of people really had as like a hot candidate out there. But I think that's different inside Jacksonville. I think he was hot from the start.
I'll also remind everybody again, I love these age numbers because we get it twisted sometimes. Trevor Lawrence is 25. Jaden Daniels is 24. Like, you want to talk about if you can unlock what Trevor Lawrence was supposed to be, and I believe Liam Cohen is the type of coach that can absolutely do that. If you can unlock the best of Trevor Lawrence, you should still have a quality 10 to 12 years with a starting quarterback that can be franchise worthy for you. So, like, I'm not willing to jump off the Trevor Lawrence hype train simply because we've seen how good Trevor Lawrence can be. It just hasn't come together. So I actually love Liam Cohen to the Jags. We haven't gotten to the Cowboys or the Raiders, two of the most popular ones. We'll take a quick break. We'll get to that. Plus, we'll get to a little bit of quarterback talk next. We did the wrong thing here, see, Rob. Like, the students of the game would tell us we should have started with the Cowboys because that's what everybody's yelling and screaming about. We'll get to my beloved Raiders in a second because I want some time on that, my friend. But let's talk Cowboys for a second. Let me start here. What do you make of Shadur to the Cowboys and the entire conversation around it? I will give you the floor.
It's not happening. Stop. Stop talking about it. We don't need to talk about what does Jerry want Shadur? Does Dion want Shadur? The cap will not allow Shadur to happen to the Dallas Cowboys. Stop talking about this. It's not real. If you continue to talk about it, you don't know anything about how the NFL works from an economic standpoint. I just want to say this. You got to stop talking about this because the economics of the NFL do not allow this. If you don't understand how the salary cap works, that's causing you to be a person who thinks that Shadur Sanders is potentially in play in Dallas. He's not. The cap will not allow it to happen. And if you think the Dallas Cowboys are going to trade a bunch of assets to move up and get Shadur just to sit him behind Dak Prescott until the cap eventually lets you get rid of Dak Prescott, which isn't going to be until 2 years, 3 years at the earliest, you are stupid. Stop talking about this. Shadur Sanders is not going to be a Dallas Cowboy. This is an absolutely ridiculous storyline that people out there who do not understand how things work continue to speak about. And when they say things like the salary cap's not real, you're a idiot, okay? The salary cap is real. That's one of the dumbest things that's been invented over the last couple of years is this idea that it's not real. It's real. It's just you can screw with it long enough until it kills you at some point down the line. And the Cowboys can't do that because they have CeeDee Lamb. They have Dak Prescott signed to a max level deal. They're going to have to sign Micah Parsons to a max level deal. The guy played 13 games this year and was near the top of all the most important pass rushing analytics in the entire league in 13 games. He's signing a max level deal. You cannot then go get a quarterback who's not going to play for you, who you have to give up assets to go get him and then add him to the roster and then sit your $60 million a year quarterback behind him. It's stupid, okay? So stop with the Shadur stuff. If you want to talk about Deion, we can do that. But the Shadur thing is literally the dumbest thing that people continue to talk about, and it's absolutely driving me crazy.
And by the way, I think by taking the Shadur thing out at its knees, part of what I'm trying to do here is get rid of one of the foundational building blocks that people want to use to connect Deion to the Cowboys job. I will remind the world, the Cowboys are in a situation where they are going to, like you just mentioned, they're going to have to pay Parsons. They've already paid, right? They are in a situation where they've allocated money. That means the most important thing that the Cowboys have to do right now, if they want to be as successful long-term as the Lions are, is draft incredibly well and not give up assets. Like, if there's any team in the league that shouldn't be trading draft picks to move up, it's the Cowboys because they can't afford to lose the cheap labor that comes with draft picks. They need to stay where they are or trade down, and they need to maximize guys at a better price.
Fitz, I did a piece on Mike McCarthy leaving the Cowboys. People hated it. Cowboys fans hated it because I said, hey, you know what? When it all kind of laid out here and Mike McCarthy took the high road when Jerry kind of screwed him and his staff by saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to hang on to you right through the expiration, which is going to not allow you to interview with other teams. But, oh, shoot, also not going to allow me to go out and interview some guys that I would try to get in under the wire before the bye week, you know, passes. And now I can't get to any, you know, buddy in terms of these teams that go to the Super Bowl. I wrote this piece about Mike being like, hey, his last win in Dallas was getting out. And Cowboys fans hate that because they hate Mike McCarthy, just like they hate so many other coaches that have gone through there, despite the fact that Mike had 3 12-win seasons in a row and sandwiched around him were 2 years where Dak Prescott ended the season on injured reserve, which absolutely impacted the state of the Cowboys. He went 1-3 in the playoffs. Mike made a lot of bad calls. He got absolutely killed by the Green Bay Packers. I'm not saying Mike was a great coach for them, right? But Mike at least gave them some real breathability when it came to, hey, actually having a Super Bowl window and it being there for the taking. He just didn't exercise it, which is what keeps him from being a great coach in Dallas. You're good. You got him there, but you just never really took him that extra step. I get that. But you know what he departs from Dallas? I'll tell you what he departs. He departs a skilled position group in which there's no real dominant, scary running back in that skilled position group. There's no wide receiver after CeeDee Lamb that other teams are sitting there going, oh my God, we're scared. They went out and got Jonathan Mingo. Who, for what? In what state do you think he contributes when the Carolina Panthers are going, we need to get him off our roster because he can't catch a football? Oh, wow, Dallas will give us an asset? Absolutely send him to the Dallas Cowboys. Beyond CeeDee Lamb, there needs to be a lot of depth and talent added to the wide receivers. So far, the tight ends were waiting for someone to blossom. That has not happened. And oh my God, everybody's sitting there going, Ashton Jeanty, right? He's the running back from Boise State. They're going to send him to the Cowboys. Send him to the Cowboys. Why the hell would you want to go to the Cowboys if you're Ashton Jeanty? That offensive line is not the offensive line of 5 years ago or 6 years ago or 7 years ago. It's not Tyron Smith in his prime. It's not Zach Martin in his prime. It's not a line that had continuity and could abuse you in the run game during the best part of Ezekiel Elliott's career. It has to be reworked. This is a rebuild on offense in so many ways that no one wants to confront. And yet people are sitting there staring at the Cowboys like it's this big choice prime job when it's not. And you've got a head coach who's got to go in there and deal with Jerry Jones going, okay, well, let's see. This might be the last coach I hire for Dak. This might be the last coach I hired for myself. Like, who knows at this point? There is a sense of urgency. So there's a micro rebuild, if not a full-blown rebuild that has to happen, or at least a retooling, a remodeling, a refurnishing, whatever you want to call it on offense. And you got to do it with Jerry talking on the radio a couple times a week, talking after every single game, constantly kind of telling you what the temperature is on the team, but mentioning his team in the 90s, having Michael Irvin who's saying stuff to him, thinking about Dion getting whispered into his ear. Like, this is, that's a great job. Sure.
You know how much I love the draft. We covered it together last year. I hope we cover it again this year. I'm going to give you my way too early draft hot take the Cowboys fans need to hear. If your hope is that you're going to sit there at, according to, where are they, 12th? Yeah. Sitting there at the 12th pick in the draft and you're going to get Ashton Jeanty, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think he's going to make it to 12. And even if there was a chance he was going to make it to 12, I think somebody will try and trade up above the Cowboys to get him. So if your great hope, the great thing that you're planting your flag on for Dallas fans is we're going to get Ashton Jeanty and a rookie running back behind all of these other issues is going to turn around and make us a 12 or 13 win team again, I don't think he's even going to be there for you. So sorry, I'm the Debbie Downer of draft Fitz, coverage all the time.
Fitz, I like him as a pick. I do. I think he's a tough runner. Granted, there's a lot of mileage that was put on him in college. But I think in terms of yardage after contact, again, him being a really tough runner, might not be the fastest running back ultimately in the draft when he runs, but he's plenty fast, compact, bounces off of hits. We'll get into all this as we go through the draft run up, you know, go over and read Nate Tice's content, Charles McDonald's content. You'll learn a lot of things that, you want to learn from Ashton Jeanty that you don't get just by watching the highlights. A great pick, no question. But it's just interesting to me because everyone sticks them into Dallas like Dallas is still this high octane, you know, kill you offensive line. And yet Zach Martin, I mean, we're talking about potentially the end of his career after this season, right? After this past season, we're talking about, you know, from tackle to tackle, what really went right the entire season for that offensive line in Dallas. There's not saying it's a complete shambles. It's not, but don't pretend it's the elite level group where you can go out and take two guys in the backfield and gain, you know, 2000, you know, to 2,500 yards in a season. That's not this Dallas Cowboys offensive line as it's currently constituted.
So you're going Kellen Moore to the Cowboys. Why Kellen Moore, not Deion?
Well, okay. So early on in the process, once Mike got let go, I talked to somebody in the Cowboys franchise and I said, you know, look, can you help me? Help me focus in on something that's real here. And two things he said. He said, number one, from everything I've gathered, from what you see in the building, from what you hear, like, it's definitely Jerry is, I don't want to say he's a solo flyer on this one, but there's a lot of gut that it feels like there's a lot of gut going into this with Jimmy and Steven Jones, obviously his son and the CEO of the operation is a big part of that as well. Kellen Moore, Steven Jones is a huge fan of Kellen Moore, has been for a long time, has believed in the ability of Kellen Moore being a head coach going back years and years and years, right? Jerry Jones, big believer in Kellen Moore, also was telling people years ago, Kellen Moore is going to be a head coach in the NFL at some point. I think when Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore went their opposite ways a couple of years ago, it was an amicable split because the reps or the rep in the camp of Mike McCarthy at the time, Trace Armstrong, who repped both Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore, was able to essentially separate these two guys without it becoming a mess. It was clear Mike McCarthy wanted his own offensive coordinator. He wanted someone back there that he trusted when it came to collaborating, play calling, scheming, all these different things. He inherited Kellen Moore. And at the point that Mike McCarthy wanted to make that move, Jerry Jones, from what I was told, grudgingly said, Mike's earned it. I'm going to go ahead and let him make this change. And Kellen's ready to get out. It's just not a great fit moving forward. So Kellen leaves for the Chargers. This is two seasons ago, right? But from what I was told, again, inside the organization, Jerry never fully got over that. It was still kind of, he liked Kellen. He really wanted to keep Kellen. And he especially prized the relationship that Kellen had with Dak Prescott and felt like, hey, there's a future here with these two together, Dak and Kellen. Well, now he's got another opportunity to circle back. Kellen Moore, obviously, with the Philadelphia Eagles, has had a great season as an offensive coordinator with the Eagles. He's done a really good job balancing out that offense despite a season where Jalen Hurts has not, you know, had the best. Jalen Hurts has been okay, right? But he's not been that Super Bowl Jalen Hurts that we know from a couple of seasons ago. Dak Prescott's a better passer. Given the offensive line getting where it needs for the Cowboys, given the running back position, adding maybe a Jeanty or at least talent, you could see Kellen Moore coming in and balancing out the scheme, actually running the football, actually throwing, like, some things that at times lacked identity under him with the Cowboys. I think he's grown a little bit going through the Chargers experience, going through the Eagles experience, and he's better positioned, I think, now than ever before for a head coaching job. So I think that Jerry, having felt like when the split happened from the Cowboys, it was not really Jerry's doing, and I think he liked Kellen and really wanted to see him retained, I think that never left Jerry, and I think it allows him to potentially bring Jason Witten back into the organization on Kellen's offensive staff. So there's that ability. It's not the sexiest hire. Kellen's not going to be out there. From a charisma standpoint,
but that's Deion, right? Deion's a sexy Deion. Hire.
100%.
Right. Why do we not like Deion there, given that it is the sexy hire?
I'm not saying I don't like Deion only from the standpoint of I don't know what Jerry's capable of, right? And clearly this is something that he's been enamored with. Michael Irvin, I think, has been pounding it into Jerry's ear every chance he's gotten for weeks, if not months now, that, you know, Deion can be your head coach. And I think it is the, in a way, it's the Jimmy Johnson move. You know, like if you really want to go back to the 90s, because it is a shooting from the hip, going and getting this guy who's going to come in and be fiery and be a motivator. And, you know, he's going to draw that spotlight, and he's, you know, going to be unbelievable face forward with the media. And the Cowboys are going to be, you know, if they're not already on everybody's lips most of the NFL seasons, which has, you know, in large part, a lot of that's been Jerry's doing, Deion's going to do it for him. He's going to do all that heavy lifting, and everybody's going to be talking about the Cowboys. And, you know, Deion has, you know, to his credit, he's done well at Colorado. Not the strongest conference, okay? Has definitely got, you know, tail whipped a couple of times in some games. It's not like he's, you know, not suffered blowouts at Colorado. It's not like he just absolutely stomped every good team that they played. Schedule wasn't always not out there playing the Titans of the SEC and proving himself over and over again, but he did well. I don't know how many things necessarily translate from that level to the NFL level, but he's a connection to the past. He's clearly, I think, a good motivator. He's something that he's a guy that I think a lot of players, even on the NFL level, will buy into, but it's not going to be the same as the college level. But it's an attractive, heat-generating thing, I think, for Jerry Jones. And part of me thinks that, in a way, that's what's happening right now. Jerry's like, man, I got to come up with something. McCarthy's out. That didn't work. He's not going to take a short-term deal. It's never going to happen. And now I have to drag the spotlight back to Dallas. And I got somebody, you know, I got proponents of Deion. Again, I think a lot of it's Michael Irvin and Deion himself, who are really putting me in this position. So Deion gets out there and we hear about a phone call. It's kind of ambiguous about what was said. You know, haven't had to been able to ask Deion and get a straight answer. Like, were you offered the job? Were you asked if you would interview? Were you asked if you would leave Colorado? Were you asked what your buyout amount is? Like, questions that get asked when you actually are going to go hire a guy. I don't know that Deion got asked any of those questions.
I'll continue to reiterate, part of Deion's success at Colorado came from the fact that he walked in the room with luggage and said, if you don't want to be here, get out. And he turned that roster over year one, and then he turned that roster over completely again year two. Like, that's part of how he's done it at Colorado. Can't do that in the NFL. I just want to remind people, you can't.
NFL, everybody got Louis. Everybody brought their Louis in the NFL. Yeah. Welcome to the NFL. And guess what? The NIL, the transfer portal, it's a little more expensive on the NFL level. And oh, by the way, if you're Deion and you're walking in, hoping to get those quote unquote NIL transfers in the NFL, which are free agency signings, the Cowboys don't spend a ton of money in free agency, pal. Like, yep. I don't know what to tell you. Like, go back and look the last couple of seasons. They are not exactly rolling spenders like they might have been during your day as a player. And you're hamstrung because your NIL is capped and it's going to be eaten by three players. Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah Parsons are going to take a massive bite out of your NIL. Do you think that's going to make the Cowboys more likely to go shopping with you as head coach, or less likely? The cap is the cap. It's not happening.
I love the concept that last year, at the end of last season, he hated that offensive line so much that he was just like, we're getting rid of everybody. And they basically did. And like, you can't do that in the NFL. I just want to remind everybody that roster turnover doesn't exist that way. Okay, Ben Johnson to the Raiders. I know I will say three months ago, we would have said that Ben Johnson was the number one candidate for most people. I am dumbfounded on why somebody that turned down the Commander's job because of whatever, whether it was the culture, whether it was the organization, the structure. I'm dumbfounded to think of why Ben Johnson would turn down the Commanders, who at least had a clear path to a quarterback, only to take a job in the division where they have no path to the quarterback. As much as I love, I got the Raiders helmet behind me. There isn't a clear path to competing with Mahomes or the Chargers. The Broncos are so far ahead of schedule. Like, if Ben Johnson didn't want the Commander's job, I can't figure out why the hell he wants the Raiders one.
Yeah, and Bears fans really did not like it when I handicapped him to the Raiders and then turned around and told them, I don't know what the Bears are doing, to be honest with you. Like, the Bears are so all over the place. I can't tell you exactly what the Bears are doing. And it's curious because when the process started, I would have told you, no way Ben Johnson ends up with the Raiders because of Mark Davis, because of the history of Mark Davis supposedly saying, I'm not going to meddle. And then every single time anybody who comes out of the organization is like, Mark's the problem. Here's how Mark's a problem. Let me tell you what Mark did in this situation or that situation or who he fired on the executive level or the comments he made about certain players or the times he went and talked to players rather than talking to his either executives or coaches. So I would have said, yeah, Ben Johnson's going to completely steer clear of that. Here's what I think is interesting for the Raiders and that is very much helping them right now with Ben Johnson. I think the Jags are focused on Liam Cohen. Okay. So I think that helps the Raiders with Ben Johnson because the idea that Ben Johnson is just a slam dunk for the Jaguars, you can't convince me that they don't like Liam Cohen as much or more than they like Ben Johnson. So that's one thing that I think will move them to the back burner a little bit. That is the Jaguars. Then you have the Bears. And I think what hurts the Bears a little bit with Ben Johnson is he doesn't get to go in with a general manager that he can weigh in on the general manager who comes through the door. He can with the Raiders. He's got the ability to lean and say, okay, this is who's under consideration. This is who I like. This is who I feel like I could really work with. I'm coming from Detroit, where our coach and general manager work together extremely well. And I want that type of bond with my general manager. The Raiders don't have a GM. So if Ben Johnson says, I will come, here's my list of GM candidates that I want to work with. The Raiders are going to lean into that. The Bears can't. They have Ryan Poles. He's not going anywhere. And then again, as we've talked about repeatedly, Kevin Warren's position in the front office, in the executive layer, is something that other NFL teams warn candidates about. Don't go into a house where the house is not in order. Or some people on, you know, the higher levels of the brain trust may or may not be getting along very well or are answering to ownership in different ways. Or one of them became the other one's boss unexpectedly during the course of events inside that franchise. That's the Bears with Kevin Warren and Ryan Poles. And Ben Johnson's not going in there and naming his general manager. And I would think that is a problem. Now, is Caleb a plus? Yes, he's a plus for Ben Johnson there. I think Ben Johnson absolutely thinks he could work with him, work with the talent. The skill position players, I do think there would be some fine tuning, the running back situation, some fine tuning, the offensive line's a problem. There's going to have to be a ton of work put into that offensive line, but overall, I think he looks at that roster and he knows that the talent is there. The Raiders, a little bit different, not so great, but Brock Bowers is a dynamic tight end and a piece that could be one of these guys that in the next 5 or 6 years, we're sitting there staring at Brock Bowers and going, he's just different than every other offensive weapon in the NFL. We can't really call him a tight end. He's just a threat. That should be his position. Brock Bowers, threat.
Threat.
That is attractive to Ben Johnson, right? And again, I think having that general manager in place is a really big deal because it allows him to know there's someone who's going to go and get the guy who I want for the culture, who can fit my scheme, who can fit the age demographic that I'm looking for, the analytics end of it. That's what he sees in Detroit. That's what he prizes. And I think that's what keeps the Raiders, at least in my mind, near the top. And Tom Brady is pitching the living hell out of him. Tom Brady, you talk to anyone that's spent time with Brady in the last 10, 15 years, overlapping with the Patriots organization. A lot of people know Tom from the Patriots. A lot of people have stayed close to Tom over the years who were in that Patriots organization, particularly ex-executives and ex-Patriots executives. And they will tell you, like, Tom likes Ben and believes in Ben. And that is definitely one guy that I think Tom really is very interesting when it comes to that equation, Ben Johnson making a decision.
What I know is if the Raiders hire Ben Johnson, I'll grab the confetti and throw a little parade in the house. I love the hire every possible way. Okay, that's from coaches. Let's get to quarterbacks. We'll take a quick break, figure out what the future of Sam Darnold looks like. Okay, so let's get a little bit of common sense rolling here. Sam Darnold played like dog doo-doo. Jory says he can't make poop jokes on the show. So, you know, I don't know if that counts. I don't know where are on the but,
good
you know,
Make her an executive producer on this show.
Seems a little limiting. I mean, you're holding back my style here. I can't make poop jokes. Sam Darnold, he played like trash, obviously, and the season is over for the Vikings. I still think the Vikings franchise him. See, Rob, tell me I'm wrong. But, like, you got it. You won 14 games with them. You need an insurance plan in case JJ's not all that. Your franchise. Oh, he's giving me the nod. What? You don't like the franchise?
I think it's less likely now. I really do. After watching Kevin O'Connell's press conference this week, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's press conference, the general manager and head coach, obviously. After watching their press conferences, I think they had an opportunity to go, we're not just going to judge Sam in these two games. You know, we've said before, there's no other shoe dropping. We love Sam. Now, granted, obviously he's going into free agency, so you can't sit there and say, we're absolutely going to have him back in the franchise, because the only way you can really dictate that is to sign him to the franchise tag, which is look, $40 million. And that's off the top in the next cap. It's not, you don't spread that out. That's a 1 year, very real $40 million hit that you take all at once. So here are the couple of different complications here. And I think it's both for the Vikings and anyone else who gets a shot at Sam Darnold, if that ultimately unfolds in free agency. Sam Darnold's last two games, when if you're talking to people inside the Vikings and you're asking them if there's concern, the concern is he lost the last two games, not really in the exact same way. Because when they looked at the Vikings game against the Lions, yes, he was pressured. Yes, there were a lot of things going on, but he had opportunities. That's the problem. There were opportunities there. He was not completely overwhelmed. He just didn't throw good balls. He missed guys. His ball location looked poor. And that's a concern, because it's one thing if the Lions just completely overwhelmed you and there was nothing there. You're sitting there and you're looking out and you're saying, I just didn't have chances. There wasn't separation. No, there was. There were times where Sam Darnold absolutely had touchdowns on the table for him, and he either didn't see it and missed it completely, or he just threw poor passes, was not the high-level MVP candidate accurate quarterback that he had been over the course of the season. Then you look at the Rams game, and the Rams got to him, even though the Lions threw a ton at him, the Rams got to him and hit him over and over, 9 sacks, did all these different things to him. And what ultimately happened was Sam's clock changed in the pocket. And I think that's what scares the Vikings a little bit, is that all of a sudden, when your clock changes, you're not doing things in a rhythm where you're now comfortable. Instead, you're, for lack of a better word, freaking out. You're going, I got to get this ball out. I need to get it out as fast as possible. And I am almost immediately starting to move around and freak out in the pocket, when maybe all I need to do is slide up. Just slide up. You don't have to dance around. You don't have to back up. Step forward into pressure. Give yourself that extra second and let the offensive play unfold in front of you. Instead, with the Rams, he wasn't doing that. He was going way too fast. He was in the pocket, stepping into the wrong places. He wasn't always stepping up when he would see edge pressure. And weird, like, there were a couple of plays where, from what I was told, he faded into pressure rather than actually just all he would have had to do is take one stride forward, and the pressure would have been behind him, but it would have given him that extra time to make a play. And so it really wasn't exactly the same. It wasn't a one-to-one when you looked at the Lions loss and the Rams loss. And in both scenarios, these are historic problems with Sam Darnold. I know it sucks that we have to go back here, but teams do that. What do you revert to when, as Mike Tyson says, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth? You got punched in the mouth and you did this stuff that you do in the past that makes you vulnerable as a player. You just missed a bunch of guys against Detroit that you could have gotten. And then against the Rams, you panicked. And I don't want to see the whole, you know, go back to the whole Jets. I'm seeing ghosts, Sam Darnold. But a little bit of that, right? Those things once again cropped up, and it means for the Vikings and any other suitors of Sam Darnold, what you now know, you got to have a really good line in front of this guy. We got to protect this guy. We got to make this guy feel safe. So we got to have Tampa's line. We got to have maybe the Detroit Lions line, maybe the Philadelphia Eagles line. We're going to have to put some serious resources and development into this offensive line in front of him so that he is not pushed off his spot or forced to do things faster than he's normally used to. That's the high functioning Sam Darnold. And frankly, that's a tough spot. Whereas JJ McCarthy, I think the ceiling on him, particularly when the Vikings drafted him, was this guy moves, right? He can continue plays. He can buy you time. I'm not comparing him to Jaden Daniels, but one of the great things with Jaden Daniels in Washington was that bad line, that guy moves around. He's hard to get down. He extend plays. He can take a play from 3 seconds to 6 seconds like nothing. And that causes problems on the back end of the defense. The next thing you know, he's completing passes down the field. Darnold's not really doing that in Minnesota. And obviously those two losses, I think, changed the matrix a little bit.
So if you're the Titans or the Raiders, team like that, that has some salary cap space you're trying to figure out, would you rather have Sam Darnold and best player available with your first overall pick? Or would you rather have one of these quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. I think it comes down to your evaluations now on Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders. If they remain QB1 and QB2 throughout the sifting process, I think that's what you have to sit there and look at. You have to say, okay, part of this is financial. We're taking ourselves out of this hugely advantageous thing, which is a rookie quarterback contract, which, by the way, plays in Minnesota too. To sign Sam Darnold even to the franchise tag, you're negating this massive upside you have of a rookie cornerback deal. If you don't keep Sam Darnold, you're on J.J. McCarthy's rookie cornerback deal. And then you're going through that roster and you're extending a number of players, good players that are going to be core players moving forward from Minnesota. And you can do some things in free agency. Well, these other teams, it's you're sort of on the same hook. You're sitting there saying, yeah, we have the money. We could go get Sam. We could sign him to a 4-year deal, right? 2 years of guaranteed money. We could give him the Baker Mayfield deal and then use our draft picks for other things. But you're now you can't take advantage of a rookie quarterback deal, which leaves you a ton of money on the table to continue to build around that rookie quarterback. And you're also taking a guy who's multiple years into his career where certain things are likely going to be hardwired versus a Cam Ward, who I think we will hear in the process has the higher ceiling than Shedeur and maybe hasn't always gotten the greatest coaching from year one to his final year in college football, leaves a lot of meat on the bone in terms of him developmentally. Some coaches have to really like that. They'll say, hey, he hasn't always had SEC level coaching, right? It hasn't always been the tippy top of development for him. That's great. Shedeur, you're saying, okay, the ceiling isn't as high, but the floor isn't as low, completes a ton of passes. If we can just convince him that it's okay to throw the ball away and have a 68% completion percentage versus like a 72 or 73% completion percentage, that's very advantageous. We take the sacks off or we reduce the sacks a little bit by taking some hits on percentage points and throwing the ball away. But Shedeur's very efficient. He's gotten an arm where he can make all the necessary throws and especially the short to intermediate game, extremely accurate. He can absolutely throw a good deep ball. It's a lot there, I think, to like. So when you sit there and you break those two guys down and then what the rookie quarterback contract gives you, I think for both the Titans, for certain aspects, the Browns, could really use a new quarterback with a rookie deal. As you said, the Raiders. Same with the Giants. Everybody can do quite a bit extra once they're on a rookie quarterback deal, and it frees up a lot of work to be done on the roster around them.
Yeah, the Browns are such an interesting case study because, in my mind, due to the money they've got invested in Deshaun, they're just going to have to draft at some point.
Fitz, they don't have a quarterback next season. Deshaun re-tore his Achilles. He's likely not going to play in 2025. Like, that's not, I think people need to understand here, like, the second tear, this idea that Deshaun's going to roll out and just, hey, he's going to be good to go in July or August, that's a pipe dream. That's not happening. And he was already dealing with a prior tear before. And there were other injuries, in past year. Like, it's all this has a cumulative effect. I think in the Browns' minds, they're sitting there going, well, let's see, a couple of things here. I would personally like to know specifically how he re-tore his Achilles. I would like to know that. I would like to know exactly what happened, because I've jumped into it, read everything I could read, and I'm like, I don't know, like, what was the specific incident where this re-tear happened? I'm curious about that. And then number two, knowing that he's going to miss a vast majority or a significant portion of the 2025 season, you got to have a quarterback ready to go right now. What are your options? You don't have money. It's not a lot of cap money there. You're sitting at two, and you could have a viable quarterback on the board. And let's say it's Shador. Let's say Shador ends up being QB2 in the evaluation. His skill set fits Kevin. His skill set, when you look at Kevin Stefanski's offense, it fits. Like, there's translation that can be made there. And, you know, Joe Flacco came in and lead the team to the playoffs, right? When Joe Flacco got off the couch. Can't tell me that if Shador Sanders is able to get near his ceiling in the NFL, which might not be, you know, all pro level, but could be a Pro Bowl level quarterback, he fits in Stefanski's offense. I think you got to consider that if you're the Cleveland Browns and go, by the way, this rookie can bridge us out of the Deshaun Watson era, which is where we're going anyway.
Yeah, at this point, by the way, it should be noted, even if the Browns tried to figure out if they could get out of the Deshaun Watson contract for cause, basically saying he did this to himself with the Achilles injury by not following the rules, that would save them in actual money, but it doesn't change their cap situation for everybody like trying to figure this out.
Yeah. It's not people. Okay, so let's say that's a thing, right? And we don't know that. But let's say for some reason in the coming weeks or months, we find out, like, Deshaun Watson, this Achilles tear happened in a way where there's an ability for the Browns to somehow claw back money or withhold money or whatever, right? You don't get immediate cap relief. That doesn't happen. that's not how it works. Not like, oh, we just, you know, NFL says, okay, well, you don't have to, you know, now you don't have that salary cap allotment this offseason and you suddenly are freed up. No. And even if that were the case, let's say it was a situation where the team felt like, hey, some money got voided here in you know, this re-injury of the Achilles, this is going to be a long process. There are going to be a lot of lawyers. The NFLPA is definitely going to get involved because that is their god contract. That is the NFLPA's favorite contract that's ever been signed in NFL history. They're not letting that thing get voided for anything. So you can expect that even if the Browns thought, hey, there's a scenario here where the re-tear occurred and maybe something's voided here, the path to actually making that happen is, I mean, one, from an evidential standpoint, is just, I mean, I can't imagine how high that bar has to be. And then secondly, just from a legal standpoint of it dragging on forever, that's what I would expect.
Yeah, and I would just remind everybody, while they're very different situations, the tragedy involving Henry Ruggs for the Raiders, they obviously cut him after he was arrested, and you know that hurt their salary cap situation. That's just real in the NFL. Like, it's just, unfortunately, even if there's situations that you can't fathom and you want to get out of a deal with the player, you still have to have the salary cap financial ramifications. That's why I'm convinced, again, way too early projection here, I am convinced that quarterbacks will go 1 and 2 and that no trade will be accepted to get them out, because both teams need a quarterback at 1 and 2 and they'll be desperate.
Absolutely.
All right. And we'll cover the draft all the way up to then. That's what I know. I know we've already run late. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Emmy's going to make this sound beautiful because she's spectacularly talented. And we should give a shout out to Frank, not with us, because he's at Disney World hanging out. So hope Frank is writing It's a Small World and then being yelled at by security. In my mind, Frank went drinking around the world at Epcot, went to It's a Small World, and now he's been detained by security. That's the only way I can see that play.
Frank's going to listen to this. And he's going to be like, oh my God, Charles just sucks all the oxygen out of the room with every question. Just talk. It's like a 5-minute diatribe. Every question's ridiculous.
Frank's going to be yelling in his plane seat on the way back, yelling at you. That's what I know. We'll be back on Sunday to recap the divisional round. I'll be back with Frank then. You don't want to miss it. In the meantime, rate, review, subscribe. You know all the drills. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Thank you so much for listening.